Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're in Japan, where Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been busy revamping his economic revival plan after receiving a fresh electoral mandate. We'll gauge the impact of Abenomics thus far and ask whether the government's latest moves can deliver long-term success. Our experts will consider what more the Bank of Japan could or should do, and we'll look further ahead at some of the structural challenges facing the country. Has there been progress made in this area, and is there a genuine appetite to continue with reforms? We start in Tokyo with Kenji Hall, Monocle's Asia editor-at-large. We asked Kenji, has Abenomics achieved what it was supposed to have done thus far?
Since becoming prime minister in late 2012, you know, he's promised the three arrows of his economic policy, and that's stimulus spending, monetary easing, and structural reforms. And the markets initially responded pretty positively to that. The yen weakened and exporters' business actually surged, and the markets in Tokyo also rallied. But then there was the sales hike in 2014 that put the brakes on spending and growth and essentially sank the economy in a recession. And then other things started rolling back. The latest data that we've seen just came out in mid-August shows that Japan's growth has come to a screeching halt in the April to June quarter. So in that quarter, growth was an annualized 0.2%. That's a huge slowdown from the annualized growth of 2% in the January to March quarter. Obviously, very, very disappointing for Abe's administration. And if you look at the reasons for that, exports, which is a huge driver of growth in Japan, exports were down. Companies lowered what's known as capital expenditures. These are investments in factories or new equipment. And so you have those things, in addition to workers not getting the pay raises they'd expected, consumers being a lot more careful about spending. And now Abe wants to assure voters that he can do more, but the only problem is he doesn't have much more up his sleeve.
Now, Abe has revamped his economic revival plan for Japan after getting a fresh electoral mandate. Can it really work this time? Well, it depends on definitions, explains Toru Ibayashi, head of Japanese equity research in UBS Wealth Management in Tokyo.
If you are expecting a much weaker Japanese yen, like just like the first phase of the Abenomics we have seen in 2013 or 14, that's maybe not the case. What we expect is a steady and solid economic recovery or economic growth. And the USD-JPY or Japanese yen is staying at around this level. And on the other side, what we expect to the Abenomics in the second phase, that is more the economic reforms and providing more incentive to the private companies to increase productivity for the next, I don't know, 2-3 years. Not something that we are going to see in the next 6 months or so.
As part of the government team under Shinzo Abe from 2007, and now senior Japan economist for UBS covering the Japanese economy and politics, Deju Aoki is ideally positioned to answer the question about the performance of Abenomics to date.
One of the biggest problems in Japan is companies' savings rate. Actually, companies have a lot of cash and deposit, and still they are increasing cash deposit. So Abenomics, by making inflation expectation, by yen weakening, and also by enhancing corporate governance, the Abenomics has been trying to give incentive to companies to utilize their savings. So to some extent, in terms of the dividend increase or share buybacks, actually the companies have been increasing. So Abenomics has been, to some extent, successful. But still the problem is the demand or innovations. So we do not have demand, we do not have innovations. So even with yen weakening, with enhancing corporate governance, still companies are not increasing capex wages enough to achieve nominal GDP target by the government and also inflation target by BOJ.
The idea of stimulating companies' capex runs through much of this, and we've not seen real progress on that in Deju's view. This is a theme we'll return to later. But next to Sebastian Salek from Bloomberg. How's Abenomics been faring and what of the latest, in his view?
It's been tough because it's been going for a few years now and it just seems like there's so much working against Abe and against his economic policy. And it begs the question, are the things that he's targeting really part of the problem? You've had wild cards come out of the woodwork, things like the earthquake back in 2011 that had a big impact on the economic prospects of the country. But one thing that it's not properly addressing is the aging population in the country. So, we're looking at the labour force shrinking. It's been going by 0.17% a year since the year 2000. Last year, we saw its population decline for the first time in almost a century. And you've got almost a quarter of Japanese people over the age of 65. And this isn't something that Abenomics tackles directly. So you wonder whether they're perhaps taking the right approach and in increasing what they're doing constantly. I mean, we've seen the amount of QE go up and up. I'm not entirely convinced that it's the means to the correct end.
Now, the Bank of Japan will be tasked with making further progress. But the BOJ already owns about a third of the government bond market and are big holders of Japanese equities too. So what other tools are there at the BOJ's disposal? Daiju Aoki, again.
If the yen weakening could have increased real export as we had in the past, then actually the BOJ's monetary policy focusing on the yen weakening should have been successful. But now that real export has been very flat, so the quantitative easing by BOJ is no more effective in terms of the increasing real export. Instead, in my view, BOJ should focus more on the wage growth and the demand growth by monetary policy. So one way is BOJ can utilize its bank lending facility, which is a kind of a back financing to the companies which are increasing capex or wages. So by utilizing bank lending facility, BOJ could support indirectly the companies increasing capex and wages.
And what can the BOJ actually do in Sebastian Salek's view?
Their ETF buying, they're now among the biggest shareholders in many huge Japanese companies. So you can see they're just pushing further and further. And it's a case of assessing whether what they're doing is really having an effect. There's also a difficulty in the bond market as well, because counterparties are increasingly unwilling to sell the debt that policymakers have pledged to buy. So it's becoming increasingly difficult to increase their QE spending to meet those targets that they've set. You've got about 16% of GDP. That's the target that they want to sell at. It's now at 80 trillion yen a year. And they're more than doubling the pace of the issuance that's planned by the Ministry of Finance. So the plans are ambitious and they've got quite a lot working against them. So in terms of the corporate side, it's going to be tough to meet those goals.
The bank could certainly entertain some much more radical measures, says Toru Ibayashi.
If you talk about the probability, they can do much radical or drastic measures from now on, like they can buy the perpetual government bond from the government. They can buy, the, say, 70% of the outstanding JGBs. Yes, technically, they can do that if they want to do it. You know, it takes time and need much more red procedures or the approvals, but they can do that. I don't think they are not going to do it and they are not aiming to do so. What they can do next is that they are going to commit, say, 50% of the Japanese government bond will be held by the BOJ and they are not going to sell it until they reach 2% or, 3% inflation, core inflation. That's maybe the next target or next move of the BOJ. That's what we think.
So Abe has a fresh mandate, but few options. And it's a similar story, seemingly, for the BOJ. So what next? More of the same? Here's Kenji Hall.
More of the same sounds like a really bad thing, but in late July, Abe announced a 28 trillion yen economic stimulus. That's almost 250 billion euros. It was one of the first things he did after his ruling bloc's upper house election victory earlier that month. So that figure, 28 trillion yen, it sounds enormous, but the size of that figure is actually a bit misleading because some of the amount is fresh spending on public works and other programs, and some of it is just existing promises to spend money that have been repurposed and repackaged to make the headline number look bigger. Economists look for something that's known as net new spending, and probably only a tenth of the headline figure would be this actual kind of new money that's being pumped into the economy. So overall, even though the figure looked really big, the actual effect on the economy will not be quite so big.
Kenji Hall there, touching on the issue of whether the recent stimulus package was, well, as big as it seemed. A headline figure of 28 trillion odd yen, but is that, or elements of it, illusory? Could some of the package have been existing promises simply repurposed? We asked Deju Aoki.
Out of the 28.1 trillion yen of the total economic stimulus package, the amount of the supplementary budget for this fiscal year would be just 4.5 trillion yen, which is 0.9% of GDP. So compared to the total number of 28.1 trillion yen, the amount of supplementary budget of 4.5 is much smaller than previously expected. And around half, out of the 28.1 trillion yen, around half, 14.6 trillion yen would be from the private companies' contributions. In case of the making linear bullet train, the Japanese railroad companies will pay to some extent. So the 14.6 trillion yen is from the private companies, not government direct spending.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the decision to go negative on interest rates, and we'll also consider, in more detail, the success or otherwise so far of the so-called third arrow of Abenomics, structural reform. The next question we're posing on the Bulletin with UBS is simply, was going negative on interest rates a mistake? Well, yes, there were some side effects, but we think it was the right decision, explains Toru Ibayashi.
The main purpose of this negative interest rate in Japan's case is the BOJ, the central bank, print a lot of money, but they give it to private banks. But the private banks meaning the commercial banks in Japan, but they return that money into the central bank of Japan account. So that's the problem BOJ had for the last 3 years. To stop that, they need to give negative incentive to the commercial banks not to deposit their money in Bank of Japan. That's a negative interest rate. So that is the right decision. But as you know, that there are some side effects that the people are worried about the lower the earnings by the banks. But we don't think that's a real problem. Breaking out from the deflation is the most important thing for the Japanese economy, and the BOJ is the highest priority is to achieve the 2% inflation for the next 2-3 years.
Was going negative on interest rates a mistake in Daiju Aoki's view?
It's not enough. Negative rate would not be enough to stimulate capex or the company's investment simply because of the lack of demands or lack of innovations. So I think with negative rates, if the government introduce some reforms like tax exemptions for specific capex areas or deregulations, then I think companies should have more incentive to increase capex for new areas such as robotics or IoT or artificial intelligence. But only with negative rates, companies do not have incentive to increase capex. So it's necessary for Abe to combined with reforms or tax reforms or deregulations with negative rates.
Now, as promised, to the third arrow of Abenomics, structural reform. Can Abe really deliver in this realm? Kenji Hall.
The one thing that I think has been somewhat lacking, somewhat disappointing for economists is Abe's third arrow, and that's structural reforms. And this is where economists really want the prime minister to focus the most. People talk about this stuff all the time. It's things like deregulating markets like the farm sector and the energy market. It's reforming the tax code, corporate tax code specifically. It's getting more women into the workforce, and it's reforming immigration and labor laws that have made labor mobility here in Japan practically impossible. He's done a little bit of all of those things, but people would like to see him do a lot more.
Now, among the main achievements of Abenomics so far, we've seen corporate governance changes that give shareholders more rights. There have been some signs, too, that this is shaking up lethargic Japanese companies and encouraging them to distribute more cash to shareholders. But what about other structural changes?
So they're looking at the labor force participation ratio for women. In Japan, it is already 65%. This is higher than that in U.S., 65. And Abe is now more focusing on the reform of work-life balance. I think the labor participation ratio for women is likely to continue to increase to 70% by 2020. And the labor participation ratio for people whose age is over 65 is already 25%. And I'm expecting this going to be close to the 30% within 5 years. So one good point is because of the increase of the labor participation ratio of women and senior people, labor force has started to increase since 2013. This is a good point. Bad point is actually the innovation, the demand. Still, actually, the consumption are not solid enough. Companies are not increasing capex. So the Abe has been trying to do some reform in the area of the healthcare or robotics or the other areas, sightseeing. But still, there are some positive factors like sightseeing, inbound tourism. But still, the Abenomics reforms stimulating capex or introducing innovations are not enough to achieve solid growth.
The notion that Abe has secured some big achievements on corporate governance, but that there remains a long list of things to change, is shared by Toru Ibayashi. He guides us through some of those remaining challenges.
Liberal, the reforms and medical and pension system reforms and many other the regulational reforms are needed for the Japanese economy. And the one is them that there are 100 more to go. And I don't think corporate governance is a great success, that is for sure. But there are more things to do for the Abenomics and the Abe administration. The problem is that the Abe administration is not going to do so. And that is more painful and unpopular and policies that if the Abe administration and seriously tackle with that painful for the most of the people of the Japan, the people, the unpopular policies pushing forward, that's maybe the time the Abenomics will restart or reboot.
Sebastian Salek agrees that while some lethargic companies have had a shake-up, the big problems, well, they're still there.
Companies will do what is in their interest to do. So we've seen them throughout, we're talking the last 20 years here, cutting down debt, moving their manufacturing overseas. And that's not really helpful to the future of the Japanese economy, but they will have to do what they need to do to survive. Their interest is their own. And that's the reason we're seeing wages stagnating, consumers stopping spending. And then that causes the deflation that's been haunting the Japanese economy for the best part of two decades now. And that, of course, is a cyclical issue, because when prices fall, people stop buying. And then prices fall again, and it's this vicious cycle of deflation that's very hard to get out of, and that really is Abe's key challenge at the moment. But as you say, I mean, he's coming out with various methods of tackling this, getting more women into the workforce. Yeah, it's an important one, both economically and socially. But, I mean, structural reform is just one part of the policy. It's just a third. You've got the three arrows there, fiscal stimulus, monetary easing, and structural reforms. And you're seeing various adverse effects coming from all three of those, so it's just a small part of the problem.
And finally, Kenji Hall talks about some of these corporate and broader cultural problems. Is there a confidence, even an appetite, to address the changes our experts have been discussing? Whether it's women in the workforce, wider demographic changes and so on, what prospect of real progress for Abe now?
Up until now, it seems that Abe has seemed extremely committed to getting more women into the boardrooms, getting more women into positions of power in politics. The problem really is cultural. So as much as the government would like companies to set targets for getting women into the boardroom or into management positions, a lot of the corporate culture in Japan is sort of against that. Salaried workers here work very, very long hours. And a lot of women have decided that that's not for them. There's also the problem of a shortage of daycare facilities for couples with children. When it comes down to it, you know, often what you see is a couple will decide, well, if we can't get our children into a daycare center, one of us has to stay home, and that tends to be the woman. Abe has said he will create a lot more facilities. The Tokyo governor, Yuriko Koike, has also said she would create a lot more of these daycare centers to allow more women into the workforce. But that's only part of the problem. Really, what we need to see is a cultural shift in a lot of these big companies.
And that's Kenji Hall, bringing us to the end of this 99th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via the usual platforms. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.